From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Today is the final full day of President George W. Bush's first term. For 4 years, the president has been at the center of events at home and abroad, including the 9/11 terrorist attacks and the two wars that followed. NPR's White House correspondent Don Gagne has a look back.
January 20th, 2001, it was a cold and wet and gray Washington, D.C. day that welcomed the president-elect to the platform overlooking the National Mall to take the oath of office.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office.
And on that day, there were many questions about what kind of president George W. Bush would be. He had lost the popular vote and wasn't able to claim victory until mid-December when the U.S. Supreme Court made the still controversial decision declaring him the winner in the state of Florida. But with his party in control of both houses of Congress, albeit by a narrow margin, Mr. Bush proceeded to push his agenda like he'd won a huge mandate, starting with a campaign-style roadshow to promote across-the-board tax cuts. This event in Omaha in February of 01 was typical.
The surplus is not the government's money. The surplus is the people's money.
The president won the tax cuts he was looking for, getting some key Democratic votes in the Senate in the process. But he also struggled to deal with a weak U.S. economy, and late in his first spring, he saw the GOP lose control of the U.S. Senate. Republican Jim Jeffords, a moderate, switched his party affiliation to independent, complaining that the president and the party had tilted too far to the right. The president's approval ratings were on the decline that summer as well, but then came the single most significant event of his first term.
Details are sketchy, but it appears that a plane has crashed into the upper floors of the World Trade Center in New York City.
At that moment, President Bush was in a classroom in Florida reading to school children. But within days, he had begun preparing the country for what would broadly become known as the War on Terror. 3 days after the 9/11 attacks, he stood atop the remains of a fire truck and spoke to rescue workers in the ruins of the World Trade Center.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... Soon.
In the wake of the attacks, the nation rallied around the president. His job approval rating soared, topping 80%, and words of support poured in from around the world. Officials quickly identified the Al-Qaeda terrorist organization headed by Osama bin Laden as behind the 9/11 attacks. By October 7th, the nation was at war.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes against Al-Qaeda terrorist training camps and military installations of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan. These carefully targeted actions are designed to...
The Afghan war resulted in the overthrow of the Taliban. Since then, elections have been held. There's a new president, Hamid Karzai, and the mission is hailed as a major success in the war on terrorism. But despite the president's own blunt prediction at the time that Osama bin Laden would be captured, dead or alive, the Al-Qaeda leader remains at large to this day. It also became evident that the U.S. response to 9/11 would not end with the Afghanistan war. And in his 2002 State of the Union address, the president used what has now become another iconic phrase as he described other threats around the world. He was speaking of North Korea, Iran, and Iraq.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world by seeking weapons of mass destruction. These regimes pose a grave and growing danger.
It was soon clear the U.S. would focus on one of those regimes. The president and others in the administration made the case over and over that Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein had stockpiles of dangerous weapons of mass destruction for use against the U.S. and its interests. Here's National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice.
The problem here is that there will always be some uncertainty about how quickly he can acquire a nuclear weapon. But we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud.
As that image settled in on the American mind, the American response began.
Earlier, U.S.-led forces sparked war with Iraq, firing cruise missiles and precision-guided bombs.
The war in Iraq differed from Afghanistan in that it was a preemptive strike, portrayed as part of the larger war on terrorism, but not as clearly linked to 9/11 as Afghanistan. As such, it was controversial in this country and around the world. Relations with longtime allies, France and Germany, were strained. In Britain, Prime Minister Tony Blair staunchly supported the Bush administration, a position that at times made him extremely unpopular at home. Iraq did not help the American leader's popularity either, and the issue loomed large throughout last year's presidential race. Democrats hammered away at the president's decision to go to war and at the failure to ever find any weapons of mass destruction Saddam Hussein was said to possess, and about the ongoing violence and danger and loss of U.S. soldiers that continues there today, Democratic nominee John Kerry.
In Iraq, this administration's record is filled with bad predictions, inaccurate cost estimates, deceptive statements, and errors of judgment, presidential judgment, of historic proportions.
But through it all, the president continued to argue that he had done the right thing, making difficult choices to make Americans safer.
I wasn't happy when we found out there weren't weapons, and we've got an intelligence group together to figure out why. But Saddam Hussein was a unique threat, and the world is better off without him in power.
The president won in November by the narrowest percentage margin of any reelected president, but Republicans also gained seats in the House and Senate. The White House views this as an endorsement of Mr. Bush's agenda, not just on Iraq, but on the domestic issues he's championing, from Social Security and tort reform to expanding the No Child Left Behind education reforms.
The campaign over, Americans are expecting a bipartisan effort and results. I'll reach out to everyone who shares our goals, and I'm eager to start the work ahead. I'm looking forward to serving this country for four more years.
But the question, as Mr. Bush begins a second term, is how much reaching out he will be willing to do, both to Congress, where even some in his own party are expressing misgivings about his agenda, or to foreign capitals, where first-term disagreements may not yet be forgotten. Don Gagne, NPR News, The White House.